Welcome to Cider Chat. You know, I was thinking that there must be a bumper sticker somewhere that says, couples who make cider together, stay together. Or at least there should be, especially for this week's featured guests, Wendy and Patrick, who have some funny tales to share about their life as a cider-making couple, and are our featured guest in this year episode 273 of Cider Chat. Hello, my name is Rhea Wincaller, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, cider enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. We'll be getting to our featured conversation with Wendy LeBlanc and Patrick Mann of the 1785 Cidery based in Germany coming up soon. But first, let's hear a little wee bit of news out and about in Ciderville. Next up, we're heading out to Washington State, and we're going to be going to a town called Puyallup. And in that town of Puyallup is a cidery. Its full name is Cockrell Cider, and it was started by two brothers by the name of John and Richard. Well, wouldn't you know it, I've been in a little bit of a correspondence with Richard, and it turns out that they have a cider song, which you're going to be hearing next. And while you're listening to it, I just kind of dig like the chorus line where, you know, these it sounds like primarily men are coming in going, yeah, or who, I'm not sure what, but it sounds cool either way. And they do make mention of Richard Cockrell, who is one of the brothers. So I just dig it. It's very hometowny. So kick back, drink a cider, and enjoy this little tune coming out of Puyallup, Washington from Cockrell Cider. Well, just go on up to the bar now, and I'm sure Richard will pour you one. I love that. Yeah, that's how it's done. And how sweet. Thanks a lot, Richard, for sending that my way. And it's really a high honor to be able to share it here on Cider Chat. So good cheers to all of you folks. And I could see you kind of like swinging the mugs back right now. I hope it is a happy Sunset Cider Club wherever you are. And by the way, if you have a cider song that I don't know of, or perhaps you wrote and you'd like to have it played here on Cider Chat, do send it my way. You could send it to info@ciderchat.com. I just received a little Instagram notification that Nonfiction Book Lovers has been binge listening to Cider Chat, and as such has just, well, has some wild apple trees on the property there, and has gotten three different books on apples. The first two books are both by the author Russell Stephen Powell, and that's Apples of New England and America's Apples. And I really want to recommend, if you like what you see from Russell's work, you should know he's the executive director of the New England Apple Association, and they have a blog post. You sign up for that. He sends it out during the fall months every single week, and a little bit more sporadically over the rest of the year. So they're doing fine work there. That's for the six states in New England. And there's a lot to be gleaned there. Just an amazing, amazing quality of books. And his passion really pours out of there. Along with a third book that you bought, which is Apples and the Art of Detection. And that's by the renowned apple detective himself, John Bunker, who is up at Super Chili Farm up in Maine. And John Bunker is just a beloved apple person, and has been on this podcast a couple times now. And shoot, man, I just love that guy. So thanks for mentioning that. Thanks for supporting authors. There's just so many good books out there. And good luck with those wild apple trees. I have full confidence in you. And those apple trees have just been waiting for you to come along.
Walking through the orchards.
Earlier this year, I sent out a request on the podcast to all of you out there in Ciderville to contact me if you'd like to share a fun story about your life as a couple in Cider. Well, that led Patrick Mann to reach out and contact me, saying that he did have a good story. He gave me a little bit of the background, and I said, wow, this is great. It's really great. And so when we actually did the recording, they didn't just have the one story, but at that point, they actually had two. So we're going to be looking at two fun little episodes, I should call it. Maybe they'd call it something different that they have experienced and thought it'd be just kind of a fun thing to share with all of you. Patrick is born and raised in Germany, but he went over to the U.S., and that's where he met his now wife, Wendy LeBlanc, in Seattle, Washington. So you're going to hear a little bit of that cross-cultural dialogue in two different dialects, right? The U.S. dialect and the German dialect, which is just part of the beauty of our world, isn't it? I just love that. So we're going to first start with finding a little bit more about the home that they live in. So let's go first to Patrick Mann.
Now, these big houses which combine stables and living quarters and barns all in one big house under one roof, and they're sort of very iconic for this region. And my dad, you know, fell in love with these houses, and he bought one. My family bought one about 50 years ago almost now. And yeah, we've been living here since. Like I said, I grew up here, went to school here, and then I left when it was, you know, I went to university, I left here, and then I went somewhere else to work, and eventually I ended up in the U.S. and in Seattle, and that's where I met Wendy. And I stayed there, I was there for 18 years, and then pretty recently we decided we'd come back and we'd give cider making a go here in this area and come back to the family farm.
Being a New Englander, I thought, wow, these homes sound a lot like our big old farmhouses here, where each building was connected. And in some ways, they are, but they're more condensed. Or as Patrick puts it,
that's kind of ingenious. So it's a hilly area, so they would build these houses on a slope. And they would usually have like three levels. And The top level is the barn. So there's a big, you know, entrance, a big barn door, which is towards the back of the back of the hill. So you can drive in there with your hay cart or your tractor. Mm-hmm. Right from the hill into there, and you can dump your hay. And then in the middle was kind of sleeping areas. And then in the bottom was where they had the stables. Wow. And so you could dump the hay, like, you know, when it's time to feed the cattle, there was a big hole. You would dump the hay from the top, just right down and drop it right into the barn, into the stables, I mean. So it's kind of ingenious that way.
Well, part of the bottom floor was also sort of where they had the stube, or like the little living room and kitchen. So, and then they had just stairs from that small area up to the bedrooms. Yeah. So the stables were sort of in the back of the first floor.
Yeah, but the living, the sleeping quarters, yeah, the bedrooms were above the stables. So they sort of, the warmth of the animals would heat the...
Is that what you're living in?
It was like that when we bought it. The previous owners had still had cattle. There was still like manure in the stables. But we converted it. We modernized it a bit, but we, you know, kept it very traditional. Yeah.
That is so cool. That is nothing like what I was thinking about. Yeah.
Yeah. In New England, they're more like shorter and stretched out, building to building, or between, I don't know, they seem longer and.
Yeah, it's longer. It sounds like you're like one building that has everything in it. It's so, so classically well built and very, a lot of precision, I imagine.
Well, that's where 1785 comes from, because this house was built in 1785. This place really for us was the big inspiration.
Now, the original homestead did have apple trees there, along with some old pears. And of course, Patrick's parents also planted some too. And just 3 years ago, both Wendy and Patrick were back visiting in Germany. And at that time, they began grafting.
And planted out in a nursery 150 trees. And then next year we moved here in 2018, and that's when we planted out the new orchard. Was that a hectare?
Yeah, it's about 2 acres worth. And it's all standard trees. There's not that many trees. It's just over 50 trees, but it's all standard. So eventually there'll be big trees. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's very typical again for this area that, you know, every farm, I guess, you know, like in New England, I guess every farm would have a few fruit trees just for their own, just for eating and making cider. And also they would plant fruit trees in places that were not viable kind of for agriculture. And they would graze cattle there under the fruit trees and have fruit trees sort of as a secondary crop.
I must say I am partial to standard apple trees because they do live longer than a dwarf or semi-dwarf. And for a house that was built in 1785, well, it just feels fitting. And that led me to my next question for these two, in that how did they get into cider? Was it spurred by the excellent cider that you could find out in the Pacific Northwest? Well, as Patrick puts it, this was something that was done while he was a child. The local farmers would pick up all the apples, put them in a sack, and bring them to the local cidery to get pressed. They bring it back home and start fermenting, and around about in February, they would start dipping into the cider. And along comes summer, and as we know, in Ciderville, oxygen and all those other little characteristics, microorganisms get to work, and the cider starts turning. It'll get that kind of vinegary taste. So around about summer, they're ready to start pressing for that next batch for that fall. And of course, the farmers back then did not use anything except the yeast that was on the skin of the apples or in the cidery at that time. So you could say it was a wild ferment. And there's also something going on, too, here that's really critical to all of us in Ciderville.
These apples here are very high acid. Mm. So fermentation is usually fine. You know, you don't get problems with infections or something. So I was familiar with that. And yeah, and then in Seattle, that whole big, you know, cidery boom. I got connected with some people through a program in Seattle called City Fruit. Their mission was to basically save fruit from trees that weren't being harvested and distribute that, or, you know, find a use for it. So that it didn't just rot on the ground. So they would distribute it to food banks, things like that, or just teach people to make better use of it. They put on a program, kind of a fruit tree stewarding program.
Master Fruit Tree Stewards Program.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I went through that, and they, you know, they, it was to train people who would then kind of go out into the community and educate people about taking care of their fruit trees, you know, how to prune them, how to, you know, do sort of pest control with simple means, you know, biologically. And anyway, so I went through that program, and in that class, there were a couple of guys who were super, you know, cider geeks. And then one of them went on to, like, was planning to open his own cidery. And we kind of became friends, and I went out and helped him graft some trees and plant some trees. And
cider makers, like, group that we get together and sort of share what we were doing and our samples, and come together, little tastings, and just talk about it. And it was, that was really nice.
Yeah, we would meet in the garage of this one guy, and people would bring, you know, their samples, and we would sit around and we would, yeah, talk shop and taste ciders. And yeah, that was a good time. Mm-hmm.
It sounds so secretive, but it is legal to make cider. And the reason why both Patrick and Wendy are now in Germany, well, it had a lot to do with family. You see, his mother and father are still living there, and they're now in their 80s. And with a homestead that is fully heated by wood, well, it was time to make a move and help out the folks. And the fact that it's such a gorgeous place and there's a history of cider made perfect sense. So let's dial it up a little bit now and go to their first of two couple stories that they have to share.
We wanted to get some barrique, start aging some cider in barrels. So we had been waiting to hear back from several people Patrick had reached out to. And it really wasn't easy for a time to get our hands on any barrels. And then somebody contacted us and said, hey, we got a couple of barrels available. So we're like, boom, okay, we want to get them. Yeah, it's been a long winter here, but there was kind of a nice break. So we went and did a combined trip. So we drove 2 hours with our trailer to go pick up a barrel stand for two barriques, two 225s. We picked them up from somewhere on the Bodensee, so on Lake Constance, which is in the south. Got there and strapped on the barrels and put our tarp on and got everything set up.
Yeah, there were whiskey barrels, and we were really excited that we could get them, and they were just recently empty, and so we were like, oh, we got to get them, you know, quickly, and so, you know, refill them, not let them, you know, sit around and get dry. Yeah. So yeah, we were really gung-ho.
Yeah, we were super stoked. We had to go. It was like, we'll be there. You're open at these times. Okay, we'll go. So we were there and we started leaving. And as it turns out, that was the day the biggest snowstorm had started falling. So that was the biggest snowstorm had been forecast. But we thought, you know, we'd be on the highway. Anyway, we got there and it's on the edge of the Black Forest and like, and out here, and it's just very small little roads through villages and through the Black Forest, and in snow, it's like, Patrick can drive in any weather, but I grew up in Utah. I can drive in snow. It's not really a problem. I'm usually a driver anyway. I like to drive, and I don't have a whole lot of experience pulling a trailer, like, but that's okay. I'm ready. So I'm driving, and we started going up and around. We're following Google. Like,
yeah, we're going with
like, okay, Google, thanks.
Oh, no.
So naive. Oh, my God. We still trusted Google Maps. So,
dear.
Yeah, so I started going up this mountain through this little village, and the snow started falling, and we're in the old, you know, Patrick's dad, mom and dad's old Golf that we got when we got here. It's a good, solid car.
Yeah.
Got a tow bar, you know. So we're driving, and a couple of cars ahead of us started spinning out. And these are teeny tiny little roads. There's a car off to the side. Like, people weren't even making it up. We had just turned out of this place and just started, you know, not maybe a kilometer away, and we're encountering this. So it's like, and I was so stressed out. Patrick's like, just go, just keep going. I'm like, holding onto the wheel, and it's like, these people are stopped. So I had to stop because the car was stopped in the middle of the road. And so we essentially just very slowly took off, and very slowly we really made it past that first, I don't know, it was crazy stoppage or blockage or whatever. We could have been just shut down where we were and not made any progress. But we got through that and then kept driving, and people were sliding, and there were some people stuck on the sides of the road, but we were basically going into the mountains through the forest on these forest roads. We weren't anywhere where there really were people. we'd pass a village here and there. It's a really crazy place. But
yeah, I just kept going up, up, up. And I was like thinking, oh, well, we'll be over the top anytime now, and then I'll be downhill from there. It just kept on going up and up, and the snow kept falling heavier and heavier, and there were more rising on the ditch.
And it's like turning a couple of turns to get onto the next road. I just, where it was carved out in this deep snow, because we'd had a lot of snow this last winter. And it was the first time, like, just keep going. And Pat was like, just go. And I'm gunning it to try and not get stuck in the snowbank, and the trailer flipped. And I'm like, oh my God, we're going to lose the barrels. And it was fun.
I just want to say that being in Europe, when you see people pulling trailers, it's not like pulling trailers in the U.S. where you got a pickup or you got a van and, you know, you're like going down the road and you have it. In Europe, and, you know, like you were saying, there's not a lot of high points where you are, except for this like one mountain that you Google choose. You see a Golf, which is a VW, you know, Volkswagen Golf, which is a small car. It could look kind of like a little tiny Civic, like a Honda Civic from like the 90s or something, tiny. And then often attached to a camper or a trailer. So it's kind of the way Europeans get around, with small cars pulling trailers. And if you aren't used to seeing that on the highway, you wouldn't see that in the U.S. You wouldn't see a Golf.
That is a really good point. For me, that was very strange. Like, everybody has a trailer.
Yeah.
Like, you go and get gravel, or you haul your plants, or I don't even know, you go and get wood, or it's just, or your camper, or I guess here in the country it's more prevalent, but and caravanning, everyone's doing it with their little cars and just
little cars.
It is very unusual. little cars, because there are little roads.
That's right. You need the little cars.
Little teeny tiny mountain roads covered in snow with backups there. And all of the big trucks, like the semis and delivery trucks and everything, I mean, they use these roads because they have to bring goods to and back and forth to these small towns that are the small villages dotted, you know, around. Mm-hmm. And it's incredible. Like, they're not as big and wide. They're, you know, more narrow. But it's incredible to see them. And they were hauling through there. And a lot of them were also stuck. So we just encountered backup.
So you made it through.
We made it. It was crazy. And it took us hours, hours and hours. And I was getting hungry. So I get a little hangry.
Yeah.
A little weird and a little indecisive when I'm really hungry. I was hungry.
That but luckily adds to
we had a few snacks in the car.
Oh my God.
But Patrick was just like, he was so good. I mean, I wouldn't have wanted to be the passenger in that situation. Mm. And
there wasn't anything I could do.
Bringing it around to the point where we got home.
Oh, okay.
It was very late, almost midnight. And Patrick's mom had been incredibly worried about us, and we didn't have any network connection or any mobile data or anything going through here, so we couldn't send a message. And she was so worried. She's like, oh, thank God you guys are home. And when we told her the way we had gone, and she said, Are you crazy? That's the highest point in the Black Forest. That was the biggest storm. Oh, she was, yeah, she was super relieved that we were safe and sound, but she had waited up and been sitting up, like waiting to see the car coming up the driveway and that we were safe and sound.
Well, that's good to know that somebody was looking out for you. Yeah. Just to kind of tease this out a little bit, I think that this does speak to the complexity of one being in a business, but also with cider. It's a craft. It's a passion. And then you couple that on top of the pressure of getting things done. Like you have this little window of opportunity. All of a sudden the weather kind of screws you up, whether it's like we're all waiting for a potential, like, you know, storm coming now after so many hot days and trees starting to bud out. This is kind of a constant for people who are in like an industry that's around farming, and shit happens. You know, I mean, you got to really be careful for that, but it happens. And I like how, you know, Patrick's like, what else can I do? You know, the person's driving, you know, Wendy's driving, you just got to be there and just keep your act together. 'Cause next time it could be in the cidery, like dealing with a valve that's blown or something else. And these are skills that you can't go to school from. You can't learn this out of a book. You got to step into cider making and just life in general with a certain attitude, tenacity, and faith and patience in each other. So once again, you know, I hear it. I've been in those kind of crazy snowstorms. And
sounds like you know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's
definitely.
So, you know, so trust in the cider. Like, you know, oftentimes, you know, you're overthinking. Say, oh, what's going on? Should I be doing some intervention? But no, you should just be patient and, you know, let us do its thing. And most of the time it works out.
Yeah, you're so right about that. Absolutely right. Yeah. And I know a lot of people listening are hearing this and they're not in their head because we've all been there, and it's really easy to like yell at the person that you love the most and freak out, but that's misdirected. And in the end, so just kind of, you know, keeping the faith in each other. So important.
If you're not having fun and, you know, it's like, okay, yeah, stuff's going to happen, but you go, okay, let's try something else, but, you know, keep the music going, as it were.
Well said. Yeah. So can we talk a little bit about that story, though, you originally told me about?
Yeah. So it was, we do a bunch of small experimental batches, you know, and we have sort of a little loft space here off the main house. And so we had a carboy of cider going in here. And we've had, in the past, we've had a couple of blowouts. So I said, oh, we'll be smart, you know, we're going to put it in the, let's put it somewhere where it can't do any harm. Let's put it in the shower, in the shower stall. So I put that carboy in the shower, you know, the airlock on it, and it was bubbling away, and, you know, everything was good. And yeah, we were happy. You know, we
it
went to bed.
It was super active. Yeah. Great. So it was perfect.
Yeah, we went to bed and it was, you know, bubbling, nice and sort of relaxing noise in the background. Put you to sleep. Anyway, the next morning, my mom said, you know, what's that noise coming from your apartment? And, like, I woke up in the night and I heard this noise and I couldn't figure out what it was. So I got up and I looked around. And I was walking around the house trying to figure out what it was, you know, what it was making this noise. And so she hunted all around and, you know, finally she came up.
She came to our door.
Yeah, she came to our door and she heard that it was, you know, coming from our place. And I guess, and she assumed, you know, it must be okay. You know, at least it was, you know, the heating system that was ready to blow up or something. But anyway, you know, she had her concern and and wondering, you know, in the middle of the night. And so I said, oh, no, that's a cider.
I'm surprised she didn't smell it, too, because I'm sure it was off-gassing a certain bit, you know, the kind of yeast.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. It's just sort of a freak kind of thing of the way the sound is transmitted through the house. That it kind of went through the tiles, and I don't know, through the wooden structure. And then, you know, they heard it quite distinctly in their bedroom. It's a big house, so it's kind of weird, but
yeah, it's like through that loft space and they're underneath, but we're at the very back. And we're this little apartment is very well insulated because we converted an old shed that was built at the back of the house to our little living space.
Nice.
You know, because we didn't want to, are coming to live with the folks and it's been their space for many years. And it's very well insulated because I guess, you know, Black Forest winters were really can be really, really harsh. And also cold. And so most of the time you can't hear anything through these walls are so thick, but it happens that the bathroom space is built on the other side that sort of, I guess, over their bedroom or close to it.
Reflective of the fact that it's so quiet here. I mean, just at night, there's nothing. There's no traffic.
Nice.
Odd noises, you know, make you wonder.
Yeah, she was smart. She knew she had to check out. I can almost see her kind of walking up and like ready to knock. You know?
Yeah. It's like,
maybe I shouldn't.
It was a very good fermentation.
Well, you know, I have a feeling that there's going to be many more stories to come with you both on your journey here at 1785 Cider in Germany. It's delightful. And you have the chutzpah to do it, though. You know, you're going through the snowstorm, you're coming out on the other side, and you're doing it with complete joy. And that's what makes good product in my mind. Final run, that's what it happens. And why it happens.
We are looking forward to the end of this and looking forward to drinking some with you. That would be great. Next time you're here in Europe. Yeah.
Yeah, I look forward to that too. Yes, I just love these stories in Ciderville. And it was so nice to get to know Wendy and Patrick. I felt like Wendy is somebody like I've known for a really long time. We were Zooming it, so I was able to watch them the whole time and vice versa. And I, you know, it's just that instant chemistry. I just adored them both. And how funny is that? I could just see that mother walking around trying to find out, what is that noise? Too funny. And hey, if you have a story in Ciderville too, then please contact me. I'm sure all the listeners and myself out there would love to hear it. Just send an email to info@ciderchat.com. And while I'm at it, reminding you of all these things that you have to contact me for, like if you have a cider song, or if you have a story in Ciderville that you like to share as a couple or as a single person making cider, it's all good. It doesn't matter. You don't necessarily have to be making cider with your beloved to have a good story to share. It's all good. But what I wanted to remind you of is that, yes, the Totally Cider Tours are going to be rolling out. I had to cancel tours last year to both the UK and France because of, you know what, the virus that we will not talk about right now because we don't want to deal with it. All right, okay, whatever. It's not going to take my power away, okay? It's just not. I went to two gatherings outside last week. I had a blast. We were safe, and I'm fully vaxxed. Hip, hip, hooray, right? Okay, so anyways, looking forward to 2022, and one tour might be going out early in 2022. It'll be kind of dependent upon Cider Expo and the timing of that event and whether or not they'll be actually rolling it out. I understand that France is opening in June, but, you know, it's very fluid right now, which, you know, cider people we could deal with. We could deal with the fluid. We are professionals at that. So we'll be looking at that and maybe even touching in over into Brittany. So that tour is just absolutely amazing. We meet in Paris, and then we head out to the west coast of France, where Normandy is located, and visit a lot of friends of mine who are just phenomenal cider makers, and just have a gastronomic feast. Also, we'll be making a stop at Mont Saint-Michel and staying in the area. Also going to the Peripère Museum that's in Domfontaine. And there might be a possibility that we might even be adding some sites down in Brittany coming up. So cool stuff to be looking forward to. And then for the UK Cider Tour, Well, we definitely want to go to the Rye Cider Fest in 2022. So, Albert, if you're listening, save me some tickets. We want to be there. Oh, my goodness. So that'd be like Herefordshire and also Somerset. We'd be meeting up in Bristol, which is a total cider hub, and all the wonderful people that live there. Yeah, I just could go on. Just thinking about it just makes me happy. Better days ahead, folks. Better days ahead. And of course, I'm looking also here in North America to as cider tours. Of course, I always like to lead a cider tour in my special spot of Ciderville, which is New England. And you know, we've been getting some new cideries that are coming online, and they're wonderful. They're absolutely wonderful. So a lot to be said about. If you want to find out more, just send me an email to say, you know, put me on the list. Send it to info@ciderchat.com. And with that, I'm going to leave you here for now, because there's always a lot more Cider Chat to come. This is Rhea Windcaller signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
We like cider. We like palms. We love orchards. And having fun, there is a reason.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh, yes, there is.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh, yes, there is.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Oh, yes, there is. There is a reason. We like walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet. We like cider. We like palms. We like orchards. Having some fun.
There is a reason.
There is a reason why we do it like this. Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Oh yes, there is.
There is a reason.
We like walking through the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet. Oh yeah.
We like cider.
Oh yes, we do.
We like palms.
Oh yes, we do.
We love orchards.
Having some fun.
There is a reason. There is a reason why we do it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
There is a reason why we do it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum.
There is a reason why we drink it like this.
Ba-da-da-dum. Ba-da-da-dum. We like walking down the orchards, dancing in the streets, smelling all the blossoms, kicking up our feet. Oh yeah.
We like cider.
Ba-da-da-dum.
We like palms.
Oh, yes, we do.
We like orchards. Having some fun.
Yeehaw!